Case and Gregor Show podcast brought to you by Lakewood Chev, where right now prices are reduced by $7,500 or more on 2017 Corvette Stingrays with 0% financing for 60 months. Winter pricing in August at Lakewood Chev.
Man, I saw, remember yesterday we were talking about the video that was filmed for Rashog by all his friends who couldn't make his exceptionally chosen Monday wedding out of town. I saw the video today and had to say I haven't laughed that hard in a while. Daryl McIntyre. Did he crush it? Ryan Rashog joins us now in the Hartman Report. Rashog, we went to a Twitter poll, and you know what? And on text, a lot of people are loving the Hartman Report. So we'll see if it sticks.
I don't think that's sticking. I think my people, my agents, are going to have an issue with you branding my segment with a different last name. So my people will have to get in touch with your people.
Well, we'll have to see, because you know the Hartman, you know, means that you're a man and you're very caring. Like, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. So.
The funny thing is Randine has a brother named Ryan. So there actually is a Ryan Hartman running around out there.
Oh, really? Wow. Well, this would be so proved that it fits. That's perfect. Oh, that'll be awesome. He'll get a lot more followers. That'll be great.
Yeah, I watched that video again for the first time since the wedding. And, yeah, it was painful to watch again how vicious my supposed friends are supposed to be, you and Strudwick, chirping everything from my hairline to my taste in music in front of my family and friends.
Actually, you know what? I don't think Struds and I didn't take a shot at your hairline, although I do remember Struds' final statement suggesting how the seams on your suit would be busting. that was awesome.
Good fun.
Oh, it was fun. I was laughing quite hard at it. Parker, I know, had to edit a lot of things out, which I'd like to see the rough draft at some point. Now, speaking of rough drafts, and his rookie season, a lot of people are really frustrated by it. I'm not. And yes, he pulled Yarvi. And today I did a lot of going back and looking. You know, he's a very unique case because only two other players in the last decade have come to the NHL with no North American, you know, ice surface experience at the age of 18 and played in the NHL. Pulley Yarvi's one.
Players?
David Pastrnak, when he was drafted 25th from Boston, and then Patrick Laine, and Laine obviously crushed it, right? He's kind of the exception to the rule, whereas Pastrnak took a few years to really get acclimatized and then blew up last year. And Jesse Puljujärvi, obviously last season on a good team in Edmonton, didn't get a lot of opportunities, then went to the minors and played okay, didn't dominate by any stretch. And then I looked at other fourth overall picks, and Ryan Johansson's numbers jumped out at me off the page. Drafted at 18, didn't play. Then he debuted at 19, had 21 points as a 19-year-old. The next year as a 20 was the lockout shortened season, so he played 40 games in the AHL. Then went to the NHL, Schauger, and had 12 points in 40 games as a 20-year-old. And then suddenly the next season, blew up and had 63 points. Right?
Like
as young guys, it's really hard to suggest kind of how quickly. Now, he's a centerman, so I think it's a little bit different than a winger per se, but Puljujärvi is kind of hard because there's not many legit comparables for him.
Right, and I mean, he's his own, he's going to write his own story, and looking at the past and seeing what's happened before him is good. It's relevant because you see other players who have climbed the same ladder, but he's going to be different than everybody, and so it's just going to take some patience. And whether it's a year of patience, 2 years of patience, 3 years of patience, I believe Puljujärvi is going to be a good player, as I said yesterday when we were talking about him. You look at all the skill that he has and the size that he has, the physical prowess that he has. It's going to happen. I'd be stunned if it didn't happen. Just strictly becomes an issue of putting him in the best position. So what is the best position to put him in? Give him a spot to lose and see what he does? Make him feel like he's up against it and make him earn it. What's the best way to go about it? Well, the Oilers have not stacked a lot of players in front of him, right? There is a spot heading into camp for him to lose. They're thin on the right side by trading Jordan Eberle. They thin things up on the right side. Strom can play there if he needs to. You got Kajula and Slepyshev that can both play over on that side. You got Cassian who could play up in the lineup if he had to. So there's other good players he's competing with. But to me, Puljujärvi has a spot to lose. And that's the way they decided to head into this year's training camp. They gave him Jokinen to work with him to see if they can get him comfortable and maybe even play with him. And it'll be really interesting to see how he manages with this kind of expectation coming into camp again.
What's your expectation for Darnell Nurse this season?
Ah, well, he and Benning are competing for a spot on that second pairing. I mean, flat out, they are. They're both looking to play with Chris Russell on the team's second pair on the blue line. I mean, that's with Sekera out, it's going to be one of the two of them. Russell can play either side. And so whoever comes in to training camp and looks like they're ready for more, looks like they can take on more, they'll have the opportunity to step up. And so to me, it's a competition between he and Matt Benning to see who's going to be able to slide into that role and start the year off the third pairing. I think they're going to lean towards Benning. He did it a little bit in the playoffs. And I think that I think they believe both of these guys can be second pairing defensemen, but maybe Benning allows them to keep Russell on his natural left side instead of having to push him over to the right. Maybe that gives Benning a little bit of an inside track, but I think Nurse should be pushing for a second pairing spot early on in the year here while Sekera is injured and potentially by Christmas time with the way he's playing.
Yeah. See, it's interesting on Nurse and Benning because, you know, Todd McClellan's talked about it, and if let's say Nurse outplays him and they move Russell to the right side, they don't really have a third-pairing left defenseman.
Right. They end up in a little bit of a...
Yeah, they would go with two lefties. They'd play two lefties in the second pair and then possibly two righties in the third pair, right? So I don't... That's why I'm curious, and I think Benning and Russell start together and Nurse and Grimes start together. And then depending how the season goes, if Nurse is playing really well, I think we might see a Nurse-Larson pairing at some point this year to really just be looked upon as kind of a shutdown role. And Nurse does put up pretty decent numbers possession-wise when he plays with Connor McDavid just because he can transport the puck so well. And I wonder if that's something we see later on. I think Benning kind of has the inside track on the second pairing right side shot just because they don't really have a third pairing left defender. Well, I guess unless it's Chris Russell and they play Nurse and Benning together.
Well, yeah, and I think the other guy we could be talking about a little bit is Obi Thue, who can play who plays the left side. And he could be a guy that slides in there. I know he was kind of a late signing and a little bit under the radar, but he has some game. So we'll see how he looks in camp. We'll see how he's moving around out there and what it looks like. But I don't think they signed him thinking 100% that he was going to be in the American Hockey League. I think they probably foresaw they've got Griba as an option on the right side. Still have Fane under contract. But with losing Reinhart, they need to give themselves a little bit of depth on the left side because they're one injury away from having to play somebody out of position that maybe isn't used to playing out of position. And that's not ideal. So I think Overtoo is signed with that in mind.
Do you have any interest in Cody Franson for the Oilers?
Not particularly. I mean, they need to get through the Sekera injury, but I believe they have what they need internally to get them there. Now, if they run into injury troubles, then they'll wish they would have gone out and grabbed them. But if they're able to stay relatively healthy, then I think they have what they need to get themselves through until Sekera is back. And I think the guys that they have in those positions, you want them to get that opportunity. You want Benning to get that opportunity. You don't want to sign anybody that potentially comes in and plays ahead of him or Nurse. Somebody with more experience. You want to give those guys those minutes and give them that feel. And I know they wouldn't have to give them a lot of money if they signed him, and they could easily play him in their third pairing. But I think the idea is to give the guys that are homegrown the opportunity and the look. So I'm not sure that they need him. You?
No, I don't see them needing him at all, to be completely honest. No, I don't see how he fits their style and how they attack. I guess if you could sign them in 1 year, like, you know, the $950 or $1 million just because you want depth, okay. But he brings you more offense than Fane, no debate. He's a much better passer than Fane, bigger shot, all those sorts of things. But in the role that they're going to play him, I don't see him as a great fit. I think he could be a bargain at the right price, but I definitely wouldn't pay any more than $1 million on a 1-year deal for him.
Right. And so similar to the circumstance they brought Russell in late summer, realizing maybe there's a need. Russell realizing the market isn't quite maybe what they thought, and choosing a location. So I mean, could it be a last minute thing that they decide, yeah, let's do it? I suppose so. And I mean, internally, the Oilers don't have, there's not a ton coming. Like they're kind of, they've got some decent players, but there's a bit of a cutoff. And they brought a whole bunch of guys in to fill in their minor league spots. They signed a whole bunch of guys in free agency, excuse me, and added to the organization, Keegan Law among them. But in terms of guys that are going to push really, really hard for NHL spots and create a lot of upward pressure, I don't necessarily see a lot of that. So maybe they want to add to their organizational depth. I really do see them wanting to push all of that opportunity onto the guys that they see as part of the future. And that's Benning, that's Nurse. They've got and they've signed Derek Grybe to a one-way deal, multi-year deal. They must believe he can play just about every night to have done that. And so I think could see them, you know, honoring that contract that they gave him and giving him the opportunity to have or lose that spot.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us in the Hartman Report or Rashog Report. We'll see. We'll let the masses speak.
That's on, enough of that.
What it'll be called this year. The Eskimos signing Darrell Walker today for basically the rest of this season, leaving him a window to check out the NFL one more time next year. And, we'll see if that pans out. It'll definitely help. My concern is their offense has been fairly vanilla the last few weeks, and you add a big target, like a very capable receiver in him. If they can't protect their quarterback, this isn't going to matter. I'm really wondering if they're regretting that because they cut Tony Washington for Kelly, and Kelly's been turnstiled way too often the last few games. Like, they might have to seriously look at putting D'Anthony Batiste back in because when he played at the right tackle position, he was better.
Well, there's no question they need better protection. I mean, going out and getting a receiver, and of course you're going to bring Darrell Walker back if you have the opportunity. He's a game breaker and a great playmaker and has great chemistry with Mike Riley and is a big part of the way they want to do things. So, I mean, setting that move aside, I think that was a little bit of a no-brainer, but I agree with you. Protection is a huge issue. And Mike Riley, the last few weeks, his numbers have been decent, but we've seen a lot of times where he's just off the mark. His timing is being pushed. He's not getting the time that he needs. And so, you know, they need to put a priority on doing a better job protecting him. And whether it's the moves that you suggest, whether it's shifting some guys around, what they've done the last few weeks hasn't been working. So something needs to change. And we'll see. I mean, we'll see what practice looks like this week and if Moss wants to make any significant changes or he wants to challenge the guys that are there to be better. A lot of times it's about challenging the guys that got stomped in that way. A lot of times with offensive line, and this has been a story in Edmonton a number of times over the years, that they, you know, the offensive line gets challenged, and it's very public when they get challenged. And I think that's what we're heading into this week or this weekend.
Yeah, we'll see how they bounce back. Calgary's been the class of the CFL really since John Huffnagle took over that organization from Jim Barker, right? And it started right from there, and they've got continuity. And so I see that in Calgary, and they've had success. I would argue they've probably disappointed. They should have won the Grey Cup last year. They were clearly the better team. Yeah. They just weren't the better team on the day it mattered.
Excuse me.
I agree. They've had success and continuity. The Winnipeg Jets haven't had much success getting to the playoffs or even winning a game in the playoffs. They've only made it once since they returned there. Yet, they extend both their GM and their head coach. Surprised by this move?
Yes. Yeah, no, I definitely am surprised. I felt that they would be on thin ice heading into the year, let alone getting extended. I thought that it was one of those ones where, okay, I mean, what have they done? What have they accomplished? They're so conservative on the trade front. They're so conservative on the in free agency. They're not an aggressive organization, and they don't seem to be making themselves a lot better. So, Yeah, I'm surprised that a vote of confidence like that. What was it? What were they, 3-year extensions? What did they get?
Yeah, I haven't seen the length of it, but yeah, that's usually kind of the norm. Well, it's rarely two. It seems to be one or three or longer. But yeah, 3 years seems to be the number that, well, at least that's the one rumored. I haven't seen it confirmed by anybody.
Yeah.
But that's the one that's been rumored on it. And I'm kind of a head scratcher. Like, why wouldn't you have waited? Like, it's not like these are free agent players that would just be able to go and sign for another team, right? Like, I'd kind of want to see, okay, because Cheveldayoff, especially Cheveldayoff, and even Paul Maurice to an extent, but Cheveldayoff's the one who's been responsible for never giving his team competent goaltending, right? This was being talked about for a few years, and everybody who followed them was like, they're not good enough. And then they didn't bring anybody last year. And guess what? The Jets, if you look at all their numbers, they should have been a playoff team, but their goaltending was subpar. And now they got Mason. Maybe he's better. We'll see. But if I was the owner, I would have said, okay, he made another change. I want to see if it's the right one before I give him a long-term contract.
Yeah. And, I mean, that relationship between owner, you know, owner, president, GM, I mean, it's not always necessarily just straight up about the results. And sometimes there's more. Sometimes there's loyalties, and sometimes there's more to it than just strictly what business sense or hockey sense would dictate. And I don't know if that's the situation in Winnipeg or not. I just know it feels like it doesn't quite add up. That expectation versus what they've accomplished versus the guys that have been running it, and especially with Cheveldayoff and how long he's been running it for, it felt like it should have been a scenario where it was a wait and see. Because they need to do something. They need to perform and do something. They need to put up a little bit to justify that. And, you know, Patrick Laine makes a huge difference for them, and they'll automatically be a better team than they were last year offensively with him there. But that's not him. That was a no-brainer, right? So how much credit does he get for that? And then you look at everything else all around him, and it's, I don't know. I don't see that they've made a lot of moves and been really aggressive to get themselves over the hump. And yes, Line A made them better, but I thought a wait and see attitude would have made more sense rather than votes of confidence.
One final one for you, Shogger. As we get into a rookie camp, outside of Yamamoto, is there anybody on the Oilers prospect tournament that you're intrigued by this year? I don't think there's anyone who makes the NHL roster this year. I don't think there's anyone who competes for it, which is fine. That means your organization is growing somewhere. But outside of Yamamoto, because I think that's the easy answer, which player are you most intrigued by that you think could be the player to help the Oilers soonest?
Oh, to help them soonest. Well, I'm not sure. I don't know if I can answer it in terms of help them soonest. But when I look at what they have in their organization and look at what they need in their organization, I mean, I'm intrigued by Ethan Bear. He's an offensive player. He's a right shot offensive defenseman, 70 points last season with the Seattle Thunderbirds. Good pedigree. I'm very interested to see this player turn pro and start him on his journey to see if he can get some of this offense and some of this swagger offensively to translate at the pro level. And I think this would be a great opportunity for him to take a step and maybe make a little bit of noise in camp. Maybe I have a feeling they're going to give him a good look. Like, what he's accomplished is pretty significant. He's put up some big numbers. So he should be able to start standing out a little bit. And it's hard. It's hard to translate offense in the Western Hockey League to all of a sudden offense in the American Hockey League, let alone NHL or even NHL exhibition. But next to Yamamoto, Puljujärvi, Ethan Bear is a guy that I'm really interested in seeing what he can bring and if he can make himself stand out somehow.
Shogger, really good effort in the first Hartman report. We hope it continues.
All right, the Rashog report, back tomorrow.
We'll see what the voters say. It's Ryan Rashog joining us every day here on TSN 1260. The Hartman Report brought to you by Auto City Edmonton, St. Albert Trail and 131st Avenue.